Welcome to episode 187 of the Atomic Power Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Blade Undead Again by Mark Guggenheim. And now, the cast begins.
Oh man, I looked at a studio that was near like Bascom and Negley. And I was thinking, oh, you know, it's by the Rose Garden, it's such a nice area, and that deli is there and everything. So I go and check it out, and I get out of my car, and it's like just this square block area of nastiness. There's like used condoms strewn on fences, and there's like a random pair of high heels in the middle of the street, like a hooker ran away. It was just like, and then there's like all these dudes just hanging out in their front yards, like whatever, but then they all just like look at me and like, I get an extreme sense, like I do not belong here. And I was just like, nope. And then I looked at the crime reports thing and it had like the highest concentration of child molesters in a one block radius ever seen.
Oh, you know why that happens? Because they can only be a certain distance from a school.
Yeah, so they get stuck.
Yeah, so like in like San Jose, there's like very few areas where they can actually live. So they all congregate in like these 2x2 areas. I read an article about that, how it's like a huge problem.
Yeah.
The way the law's written.
It's, like Grant was like, well, you know, they're child molesters. Maybe, you know,
they're an adult, so.
Yeah. And then I was like, no, but if you look it up, like if you check out what they do on the registry, they like rank them. And like half of these guys had like rankings for like violent rape against strangers.
Oh God.
Like no way. And oh man, but it was a cottage like this, a studio cottage, and it looked really weird. Like there were all these strange built-ins and like this yellow paisley wallpaper. It was a weird place filled with child molesters.
Just the filled with child molesters brings bad images to my head.
Yeah, it was like, you know where Bascom and San Carlos meet? Like, that whole area is really sketch, apparently, and I didn't know that.
Yeah. All right, everybody, welcome to another sanguine episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Sup?
Jen.
Hello.
And this week, we read Blade, Undead Again, by Mark Guggenheim, collecting issues 1 to 6, I think, of the run? Yeah, 1 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Crap, who is the artist?
Howard Chaykin.
Howard Jenkins. Oh, that's right, Howard Jenkins.
No, Chaykin.
Chaykin? Oh, balls. Howard Chaykin.
You just want to say Jenkins.
I do. I always
Howard Jenkins.
Okay.
I mean, you could say it like that. Howard Chaykin.
I wonder if he appreciates that.
I don't know.
I hope so.
I don't know. So anyway, this kicks off our, I guess, vampire series.
I called it Dracula versus Blade and Friends.
Yes.
Blade and Dracula are in all of these comics that we're reading,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, he was in this one. He was a bit of a chump in this one, but he was there.
And then this also has Captain Britain has Dracula, and so does Curse of the Mutants. So, yeah. Dracula versus Blade and Friends.
So, I don't know. I don't know if it was just because I knew that the author of this one was the same guy who does the screenwriting for CSI Miami. You know, yeah, that one.
Yes.
But I swear to God, every single time that there was like, there at least it seemed it felt like at least every issue there was a panel at the bottom of the page that was just like a close up. Of like a close-up horizontal panel of Blade's face and him giving a one-liner. It's like, I don't know if that's actually there, if I'm putting it there, but I appreciated it either way.
I feel like you're putting it there.
Okay, well then, good. I'm glad I can
answer
this comic
for
myself.
Yeah, it's good that you enjoyed it in your own special way.
Yeah, very special.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think about this in general, about Blade? I gotta admit too, I've never read a Blade comic before.
Yeah, neither. I've never read a comic where Blade is the title character. I've read comics with Blade, but this was the first time I've ever read a Blade where he leads the book. And you know it. The first issue or so, I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be rough." But as I went through the other, as I finished the run, read the six issues, I came away with it feeling like pretty good about it. You know, now that, like, thinking back, I can see I did appreciate the way that the comic flowed. Like, each issue was kind of a self-contained story, but then there was this overarching thing going on, which is a lot like TV shows often are nowadays. You know, I think I haven't watched too much of CSI Miami, but I used to watch a lot of the other CSI, and that is a show where, you know, each episode is its own crime, but there is like continuing plot points that follow the characters as the show moves on. So I felt like this had a little bit of that too, because we get the flashbacks to Blade's life, which my knowledge of Blade's origin was limited to the Wesley Snipes movies.
Yeah, that's almost everything I knew about Blade.
Same.
Which are awesome movies. Is it Wesley Snipes? It is Wesley Snipes, yeah.
Either way, we didn't correct you, so.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure it is. But I liked the... I don't know. Like I said, at first I had a bad feeling about this, but it turned out... it turned out pretty good. I don't know if I want to say it's like... Well, okay, I definitely enjoyed it. I came away after I read finished issue 6 with a smile on my face. I thought, okay, this was pretty great.
Yeah, I agree with that, like, wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I felt like I was really confused at the beginning, like I had no context, and that's why it felt like really rough to me. And I appreciate that it was very clear to me at the end, but at the same time I wish that they had done the beginning a little differently. But I also really liked that this trade kind of had like slice of life in the middle, because like the stuff that happens to him in issues like 3 and 4, it's the kind of stuff that I just imagine happens to like a vampire hunter in day-to-day life. Like, he gets caught murdering a lady after a date.
Yeah.
And then goes to jail, and then gets out of jail, and then has to, like, get beat up by a mall Santa before he kills him. And then gets to fight Wolverine, and then is suddenly like, oh, wait, I owe you, and then walks away. Like, that was so great. That was so enjoyable to read. And, like, I appreciate, like you said, it has that surrounding plot where it's, you know, the big stuff with his dad, and it's more heavy. But then, like, you get these little snippets of just, like, what his day-to-day life is, and there's no super heroics. It just seems like antics, and it was really fun.
Yeah, and I think that, I imagine that this story progression has something to do with... Well, I don't know if Mark Guggenheim... I mean, he must... CSI Miami was definitely on by the time this was published in 2006. So I think probably the writing for TV background played a big part in the way that this story was laid out. And it's neat because, you know, comics used to be like this, where they were kind of... one-off stories, especially like Silver Age DC stuff.
Oh yeah.
But now comics are very much like TV is, where one issue or episode leads into the next, and if you miss something, there's a good chance that you're not going to understand what's happening in the comic or the TV show at that point without going back to watch it. You know, it's not... Nowadays, it's pretty easy to catch up. Like, it's easy to go back and find that episode of whatever that you missed, or... Yeah. Same thing with comics, but... Because, I mean, there weren't always shops dedicated to comics, right? You would get comics from a newsstand or at a drugstore or something. I mean, I remember as a kid...
Oh, yeah, I bought mine at, like, Albertsons.
Yeah, I didn't know that there were comic book shops, so I would buy stuff from the spinner rack at, like, Walgreens or something, you know? And I would... Like, I wouldn't buy comics regularly. I didn't know that they how often they came out or anything. So, you know... But I didn't care, because I was, you know, as a kid, it didn't really bother me. Nowadays, I really, you know, I have a pull list at a comic book shop, and so I don't miss stuff. But I think if you had watched the Blade movies and you were, like, in line at a drugstore or something, and there was a spinner rack, and you were like, oh, Blade, and you picked this up, and it was, like, issue 4, you would still get a fun read, because, I mean, especially issue 4, I picked that at random, but, you know, that's got Blade fighting Santa Claus on the cover, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the kind of thing that would, like, draw somebody in. And then if you read it, you would be like, oh, this is, like, it's its own story, you know, Blade fighting this soul-stealing Santa Claus monster thing. But, you know, you would get a cool story, but then at the same time, it would give you just enough to maybe hook you and want you to, and maybe convince you to go look for more, or, you know, maybe just pick up at issue, you know, start with issue 4 and get number 5 and so on, and not feel bad about having missed something, you know.
Yeah.
So I think this was a neat way to, it's a little bit different than what we're used to now, than what we see nowadays. But it was definitely, you know, I thought it was interesting. Sorry, yeah, no, I didn't mean to cut you off, Andy.
No, no, it's all right. Because I was thinking too, like, when you said that comics used to be this way, and then I realized why. And we've talked about this before, is that, like, old comics, like when we read Fantastic Four, we talk about how there's so much words. There's so many text boxes to just slog through. There's so much dialogue to slog through. And everybody's really clear to call everybody by their names. Not, hey, you, or what's up, dude. It's always, hey, how's it going, Human Torch? Like, that's really artificial if you've been talking to him for a while, like in mid-conversation to call him by his name, you know? But that's because those books were designed to get picked up off the shelf and be read one at a time. But nowadays, because not only because you want to drive sales, so you bundle things as like a 5-issue run, you know? Like, these 5 issues are one story, so you get them together. It's not even just that. It's also the matter of... So now that they bundle them in, like, 5-issue runs, they also realize that if they have a story that's, say, 3 issues long, they have to stretch it to 4. So they add a lot more... Like, there never used to be a 2-page spread. There never used to be splash pages in the original Galactus, like Fantastic Four, which is... I don't know why that's the first thing that comes to my mind is being super text-heavy. But that stuff didn't exist then. So...
Like, oh, yeah, comics were tight. Like, there were so many panels in each book.
And now, if there's lots of room, text boxes are almost completely gone. There's almost no internal monologue anymore. It's all just dialogue and exposition. And it's like, it's almost a lost art form to do what Mark Guggenheim is doing here, to have a self-contained story in a single issue. That experience of you can pick up any issue and have a satisfactory experience reading it. The only other comic I can think of that does this is Jonah Hex and what's it called now? All-Star Western. That's the only book I can think of that's still sold and advertised as pick up any issue and it's a self-contained story. But they do it too. Yeah. I don't even think they have many overarching stories even.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I went and bought my comics yesterday, or maybe it was last week's comics, but I got, one of the books I pick up is Nova, and on the front of the book it says, part 3 of 3, and I was like, what? Part 3 of 3, so I asked the guy behind the counter, and he was like, oh yeah, this is, it's a crossover. And I was like, well, oh, what did it cross over with? And it crossed over with two other books that I don't get at all. I don't even remember. And so now I'm like on the fence. Like, do I even bother reading this? I mean, it's numbered. It's a numbered issue in the Nova series. But it's like, do I want to read? I mean, I won't have the context because this is the conclusion, you know? And I'm not so sure that I want to go buy the other two issues just so I can get this complete story, so...
Well, because then also, aside from spending the money on those two issues, you're supporting what they're doing and telling them it's okay to do it again in the future. So I wholeheartedly believe in the capitalist, but with your dollars. I hate that crap. I don't do it. The only time I've ever done it so far is a Captain Marvel crossover that happened recently. But I felt okay with that because it was three different series, and two of them are both Kelly Sue DeConnick, so I felt okay with it. But what bugs me the most, too, is when an event crosses over three books and it's like two or three different authors.
Yeah.
That's like, come on, that's a recipe for terrible reading experience.
Something that I kind of... Like, it was a red flag with Blade because it was like, here's a crossover with Civil War. And, like, it was fine in the context of Blade, but then it made me think, like, really, if I wanted to read Civil War, I'd need to go read this issue of Blade if I wanted the whole picture? That's ridiculous.
Well, that's kind of different.
So, like, a lot of...
I was going to say, like, I know Marvel kind of, like, just shows you what everyone's doing at that time, and it's not as integral to the plot as a whole. But at the same time, I'm one of those people who's, like, super compulsive about knowing what's happening. Like, I feel like they're making a marketing ploy at me, and I know I'm going to get sucked in, and I'm angry at me and them for that. So, I mean, like, it's not necessary to read, but at the same time, I remember picking up, like, a Flash comic or something, and then I started looking at reading order, and people were like, oh yeah, it's only 5 issues, but you should also read these 15 issues. And I was like, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah, I actually, after we read Infinite Crisis a while ago. Infinite Crisis? Identity Crisis.
Yeah, Identity Crisis.
No, it's the one where, not the one where Sue Dibny dies, the one where Blue Beetle dies. That's Infinite Crisis.
That's Prelude, right? To Infinite Crisis.
Prelude. Yeah, okay, so that was Prelude to Infinite Crisis, right? So I was like, oh, well, now I want to read Infinite Crisis. So I went to try to, and I found a reading list, and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to read, like, Ran Thanagar War and Villains for Hire.
Yeah, the four miniseries.
Yeah, and it's like, and something about Donna Troy, who, I don't give a fuck about Donna Troy. And so it's like, and so I didn't even bother.
Yeah,
I was like, this is way too much. I don't even care at this point.
Yeah.
But that really all boils down to, like, say what you will about how it makes it feel like some of these issues are kind of like a throwaway experience. You know, like, Blade fights Santa, okay? That doesn't matter for jack all anything, right? But it's nice to be able to have a book where it's an option to just pick up this issue and enjoy this issue. Like, I feel like reading vampires this month. I'm going to go grab a Blade.
Yeah.
Like, that's really refreshing, you know? And it's like, it makes me wonder if that's dying out because the comic industry doesn't work that way anymore. I don't know. Anyway, what did you guys think of Blade as a person? Because I'm with you, David. I've only ever seen the movies. That's my entire exposure to Blade. I don't even think I've seen Blade cameo in anybody's books. No, I don't think so. I recognize the cameos in this one. I recognize Dracula and is it Morbius?
Yep, Morbius.
Yeah, Morbius I recognize from the fucking awesome-ass cartoons when I was a kid.
Yeah, I had, like, Maria Hill, Wolverine.
Yeah, well, of course. As soon as I saw Wolverine, I laughed because I remember the discussion we had about Wolverine with X-Force. It's like, your book's not real until Wolverine has a cameo. It's like, put Wolverine on the cover and sell more issues. Hell
yeah. It's a rite of passage.
Oh, Dr. Doom, that was funny.
I love that. Dr.
Doom showed up. Actually, I did really like, one of the things I really did like about Blade as a character is that so many times you buy a comic and you know the hero's gonna win, and most of the time they win in a way that's just utter badassery, and there's no question that they're a badass and they won, and nobody's better than them, of course, because they're the hero of the book, right? But I really appreciated that Blade, in this trade, gets used almost as much as he's been a badass. Mm-hmm. Like, people are like, I know who you are and what you're about. You're just a single objective weapon, and if I can move the objective, I can move you, and it makes you super easy to manipulate.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that. That was his big fault, and they had it, and that the villains in this trade took advantage of his fault in a way that didn't make him seem lesser of a hero or a character, but also, he didn't really win either, you know?
Yeah, certainly. Even the good guys took advantage of him. I mean, Maria Hill points him at Wolverine in an attempt to, you know, catch Wolverine, and then Wolverine manipulates him back in the other direction. I mean, well, Wolverine doesn't actively manipulate him.
No, Blade, just Wolverine being Wolverine manipulated the situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you, Andy. As far as, as a character, how did I like Blade? I thought he was kind of interesting. I mean, I think... So, yeah, I really appreciated the flashbacks because it puts the Blade of the present into context. You know, we get to understand why he makes the choices he does. Because, you know, like we've said a couple times, our main exposure to Blade is the movies where he is a complete and utter badass. And he can just, mow through tons of zombies and stuff. Or not zombies, vampires. And in this, he doesn't seem... as far as, on the superhero scale, he's pretty low power-wise. I feel like... So he could fight against Wolverine, go toe-to-toe from a combat perspective, but I feel like if he was going to fight... he certainly couldn't hang with,
Doom.
Doom or Thor or Cyclops, even. He's mostly a dude with swords and stuff, and he knows about vampires. But he's just, He's like this heat-seeking missile, you know? He's so focused on vampire hunting that it makes him seem like a total badass. And then he is a pretty badass dude, but
yeah, he's got some skill.
But I feel like in the Marvel universe, he is a lot of people are don't even know him, you know. What does Wolverine call him? Edge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
He's just this dude that people know about but don't take too seriously because he's kind of off doing his own thing. Vampires don't play into the main Marvel universe that often. I mean, they come up, but as we'll see in the next two things we read, but it's unless there's vampires, there's not really any reason for Blade to be around. Right.
I mean, we talk about how they're not really prominent. I think there's even people in the current time in this book that don't believe that vampires are real.
Yeah.
You know, I think more people in this comic book universe believe in aliens and believe that there are aliens and that they have proof of aliens than of vampires.
Which that makes sense because it makes sense that because they've probably seen, especially if you live in New York, they've probably seen aliens invade, but they still haven't seen vampires. And maybe, you know, I feel like they would probably be more inclined to believe that vampires are a thing, but maybe once you see aliens, you have to draw the line somewhere, and you're okay, there's enough freaky stuff happening in the world. I don't need vampires to be part of that list, too.
Well, plus, I mean, aliens have a vested interest in making their presence known. And, hey, I've come to conquer you, so heal. Yeah. And vampires have a vested interest in you not knowing that they exist. So, it makes sense, but it's just kind of funny because if you read these comics, you kind of think it's hilarious that these people wouldn't believe that they exist.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, especially when Blade's like in, you know, he's in being interrogated by the police. He tries to tell them that he's hunting vampires. You know, at first he tries to like misdirect them, and then he's like, okay, fine, I'm a vampire hunter. And then he's like, you know what? That the cops are like, you know what? Is this how it's gonna go?
Yeah.
Forget it.
If you're gonna bullshit me like that.
Which I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. But meanwhile, there's a helicarrier just infested with vampires.
Yeah. I think Maria Hill is like, she definitely thinks vampires are real.
Oh, yeah,
but,
yeah. She knows.
But
oh, yeah.
In the grand scheme of her S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, she's like, that's fucking nothing. I mean,
yeah, she does not give a shit.
No, she's got more important things to deal with, like the superhero Civil War. But, yeah. It's funny that is a good point, Andy, that it's like, you'd think that they would be more inclined to believe that vampires were a thing.
Yeah, and that makes me wonder, like, why isn't, like, okay, I get Blade, because we get the flashbacks to him being a kid, it gives us context to what he does, like you were saying, David, but, like, at a certain point, wouldn't you just have, like, a vampire advocacy group, like, no, not advocacy, a vampire awareness group, and you just go around and, like, look at me, I'm Daywalker, see what I do, thanks,
they probably just think he's a mutant, they'd be like, oh, you're just a mutant.
That's true. They probably would just think he was, because, I mean, Beast has fangs. Big deal.
Wolverine has fangs, probably. I think he does.
Yeah, it's true. That might not work, then.
It's like, oh, you're just Wolverine.
You're just Wolverine, but without the claws. That's lame. But you get more of why he's chosen this direction when you see the flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know, you get more of, like, not just that he's special, that he's Daywalker, and that he has the ability to do this. And for some heroes, just having the ability to do something awesome is motivation enough to do the awesome thing. Like, Flash is a hero because being a hero rocks, you know? But, like, Blade has the motivation that makes him a vampire hunter instead of just being a Daywalking vampire.
Yeah, and, you know, I was going to say, because you said that Blade chose to do this, and I was going to ask you, do you think he really chose it? And yeah, now that I think about it a little bit, I feel like he did. He could make the choice to do other things, you know. He's not.
He could easily be the most powerful vampire in the world.
Yeah, he could just be a vampire.
Yeah.
Because I mean, so he hunts vampires, right? But how different is he from vampires? Like. Because he's, you know, vampires prey on humans, and Blade preys on them. You know, he's not looking to vampires for food. But he, you know, he ends up robbing them. He needs to hunt them to have any kind of income, right? I mean, he doesn't have a normal job. So it's kind of interesting because, I mean, we see that Blade is, as human beings, non-vampires, I feel like we, you know, we see Blade as the protagonist. And he certainly is the protagonist. But I feel like he's not, from a certain perspective, he's definitely not that far off from he's not that much different from the vampires.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, to consider, like, the law's perspective on this. Right, like the police officers, even if, because, all right, you can't get him for this guy's murder, right? But you can get him for robbery, and these people have disappeared, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I thought that was really interesting to bring that in at all, because then, assuming the law doesn't know about vampirism, did Blade just murder people? I mean, I know they were bad people and they deserved to die, but they were already dead. So it's like, whose property was this? Is he just stealing what was stolen from before? Or is this stuff that fell into their possession because they lived for hundreds of years? And it's like, it opens up a whole different area of questioning for the comic and everything. But I like that at least it was mentioned briefly. Like, the fact that this is a legal tangle and the law is kind of just going, fuck it, let's just try and arrest him.
Yeah, I mean, from a
figure it out later.
From a legal perspective, they don't. These people aren't vampires. They're just people that Blade killed.
Yeah,
you know,
and they don't know. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that too. It's like, you know, someone witnesses him murdering someone, and they actually do something about it, which struck me as like more realistic than we get in comics a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I really liked his clash with law enforcement because, I mean, I think, you know, as far as they see it, it is murder.
Yeah.
It's like, even if they're undead, they're like sentient people. He's murdered and robbed a bunch of people. So,
you know, it's interesting the way that story, part of the story was resolved because, you know, after we see the witness, the homeless person, it shows a panel of like a bottle of whiskey, right? And I thought, oh, Blade was gonna. I figured, oh, so they're gonna convince him that this guy's just a drunk, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, it actually, the whole vampire's not appearing on camera and stuff turned out to be Blade saving grace, which I thought was pretty interesting, you know.
This is a little twist.
Yeah, because, like I said, my mind was like, oh, they're just gonna write it off because this drunk dude. You know.
And you know, like, this all goes back to the way that Guggenheim has chosen to evaluate the power level of the character. Because this story is not possible if Blade is too badass to be taken in by the police. Right? Like, mm-hmm. If this was a Wolverine comic, there's no way Wolverine would get taken in by the police. There's just not. Right? But because Blade is who he is, and because he's been set at this power level, no higher, no lower, he is a vampire, he has these skills, he's a daywalker, that stuff's great, but that doesn't mean that he can take out a half a dozen guys in riot gear. Riot gear and assault weapons. And I'm sorry, Blade's gonna lose that fight, and he's gonna get taken the fuck in.
Yeah.
And because of that choice to put him at that power level, you can have stories like this. Like, you can't have this kind of story with Wolverine on the run.
Yeah, I mean, we even see Wolverine captured by S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, in those, like, superhero shackles.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And then he busts out of them after being sassy with Maria Hill. He busts out. And it's like, yeah, Blade, that's not something. I mean, Blade is able to get out of the handcuffs, but he doesn't, like, bust them apart, you know. He lifts the key off of the officer and he breaks himself out. He does some little Houdini stuff.
Or when he chews his own hand off to get out of shackles.
That was
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's okay because it kind of goes with his vampire power set, right? Because vampires can regenerate stuff, right?
Yeah, they have to drink the blood of somebody else to grow it back, but yeah. I mean, that's the way vampires work, is they're constantly in a state of decay because they're dead. But when they drink the blood of others, that blood rejuvenates their body.
Oh, okay.
So if you're already at, you know, you just need to drink more blood to regrow whatever you lost.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my understanding of vampirism. I don't know. I'm not a vampire. I could be wrong.
You're not?
No.
No.
I go out in the daytime sometimes.
Oh, that's why everyone calls you Daywalker.
I feel like that would be the gayest nickname. Sorry, I use the word gay derogatorily there. I apologize for that. I just feel like that would be the dumbest dumbest nickname ever.
Yeah. It'll be pretty bad.
So what we really get from this comic though, and from Blade's characterization, I think, is that he's a very lonely person. The life he lives is super, super solitary.
Yeah.
Because there's no mention even of somebody else. And the one time you show him on a date, you get the distinct impression that he wasn't going out for a date. He was going out to catch a predator. That was the point of his date.
It's Chris Hansen.
Yeah, he was Chris Hansen.
Thank Why don't you have a seat over here while I stab you with this stake?
But I mean, like, then, like, even a date. Like, he can't go on a date. Come on, Blade. Go with a normal woman. What are you doing?
It's funny, you know, like, So Blade is in Mighty Avengers currently. And he, it's kind of neat because he has, like, friends and he's on a team and it's really interesting. He hangs out with Monica Rambeau.
Huh.
And Luke Cage in Iron Fist. Is Iron Fist in it?
I don't know. Is he?
I forget. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty fun comic.
I like how they, when he's, like, walking by the TVs, there's just this little scene where they're like, and Luke Cage is still on the run, and here's another, you know, scary black man. They show, like, the really bad portrait of Blade. Yeah, that's actually kind of how that show works.
I noticed that, too, and then I also noticed that Blade gets to go on a date, but it has to be with a black lady vampire.
This comic, I felt like, dealt with race in, like, the best way possible. Because we've read comics where it's like, oh, by the way, race is an issue. Right? Like, what Ecstatics did that.
Oh, God, yes.
Like, really hard. And here it was just like, you know, these tiny little insidious things that were like, yeah, they do frame, like, people up as being scarier because they're black.
Well, it's really funny.
America's Most Wanted. Like,
like, well, and then when Lucas Cross reveals to Blade, he's like, I'm your father, and Blade's like, I am not half
not
white.
White. Yeah. So good.
I love that was his reaction.
Yeah.
Well, no, like, the whole time I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, maybe it's, like, stepdad or something, because there's no resemblance. Like, they do not look like each other at all.
Yeah. You know what? So the whole thing with him and his dad also makes me, is Blade stupid? Like, what's Blade's intelligence level? Because Blade here is a vampire who was born in, like, Victorian times or whatever the hell, and is still alive today, more or less, right? And he comes into contact with one person who says, I'm your father. And Blade's like, what? How could that be?
But that was,
I don't fucking know, his Blade. Reaction, how many vampires have you hung, like, out with lately?
His reaction was, I'm not white.
No, but he also, there was a text box or he said to somebody, like, I don't know, there was some reaction he had of, like, he couldn't possibly be my father. My father lived in Victorian times. Like, I don't know. You are a living embodiment of how that could happen, Blade. What are you doing?
Nope, only him.
So I don't know. I thought maybe he's kind of stupid. And, like, he's a smart fighter. And he can get trained properly by old people. But, like, that's it.
Well, I mean, I think we're meant to see that he's not always the brightest. Because, like, the old teacher guy is always, like, you know, obsess the details. And we see these multiple times where he just does not. And it gets him in deep shit. So, I mean, like, he stabbed a man, a human dude, through the heart. And then later he murdered that lady. Or, you know, brought her to justice, depending on your point of view. in front of a hobo. So, you know, it's like, he's not infallible in any way. And it's not like the way that superheroes are human, where they, you know, have this great crisis and they're so human. It's like, Blade's just a dude, and he's also half vampire, but he's just a dude.
Yeah.
So, one thing I am trying really hard to remember, I think the last time I watched the movie was almost 15 years ago. It's been a long-ass time. So, in the movie, is he as quippy as,
you know,
he
what?
Is here?
I was just thinking the same thing, because I'm scrolling through the issue 6 again, trying to find the place where he says, I'm not half white. But then I realized that he is very quippy.
That's what I was trying to say in the beginning!
Is it just because he's Marvel and CSI, or is it, was this, like, original to the movie as well?
I don't remember him being so quippy in the movies. I'm sure he had some good one-liners, But I haven't watched it in a while either.
I think in the movies, the old dude who was helping him was quippy, and he necessarily wasn't. I think he was too serious in the movies.
Yeah, because I don't remember the movie being, like, funny. I remember it being serious, dark action-y.
Yeah, and he had his, like, sidekicky, like, guy building gadgets for him, old white guy.
Oh, yeah, and then there was Ryan Reynolds was in it, too.
Really?
Really?
Well, he was in the third one, or the second one.
I haven't seen those.
He was actually a real Marvel character called Hannibal King.
Hmm. I've got to watch these again.
They're pretty good movies.
Dude, you don't got to convince me. One of my favorite movie series of all time is the Resident Evil movies. And they're fucking horrible.
My wife loves those movies, too.
I love them. I will. When the last one comes out, I will take your wife to a movie.
I'm pretty sure she had no idea that they were video games before she started watching the movies. But anyways, I'm just saying,
like, they're mindless action, you know? And yeah. I feel like the Blade movies were a lot like that, too, especially as you got into more and more sequels.
Yeah, and I think Wesley Snipes plays Blade pretty well.
Yeah, that was a good cast.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, in my deep in my memory banks, Jen, I don't think he was this quippy. But he probably had some great one-liners.
So this is more the tone of the comic.
That would be my guess. Like, I'm trying to think, in Avengers, in the Mighty Avengers that he's in now, he's kind of quippy, too.
Hmm. I gotta rewatch the movies.
It's really, in Mighty Avengers, it's really funny, when the series first started, there was this character who only Monica Rambeau knew who it was, and he was dressed in a knockoff Spider-Man costume. Like, it was a Spider-Man costume that someone in the Marvel Universe could buy from a costume shop. And it was a knockoff because it was, like, green and, like, pink. Like, it was like a flea market Spider-Man costume. And so, for, like, 4-5 issues, it was this mystery. They didn't reveal who it was. And I kept thinking, I was like, who is this going to be? And when it was Blade, I was like, oh my god, I did not see that coming at all.
What?
It was pretty hilarious. Because first he was dressed as this fake Spider-Man costume, and then he was wearing Hawkeye's costume from when he was the character Ronin. And it turns out he had to hide from the police or something.
That's amazing.
And so he was helping them fight. He was helping the Avengers, like, fight some monster in New York, but he couldn't be seen on TV, so he had to wear these, like, ghetto costumes. Oh, and so Spider-Man was in the comic, too, for a little while, but it was Superior Spider-Man, Doc Ock Spider-Man, and he was, like, pissed off that there was somebody wearing this fake Spider-Man costume.
It was really funny. Oh man, that's awesome!
It's a good comic. If you like Luke Cage and stuff, you should check out Mighty Avengers. It's a pretty fun comic. Anyways, yeah.
So, like, it's hard to, I don't know. It's like it's hard to get into character in this because all we get is Blade.
Yeah,
you know, because like you can't really talk about Doom. Doom just shows up and is Doom, you know.
The only other recurring characters we get are in flashbacks, or is Luke Cage's dad, air quotes dad. But he has, like, no character. He's, like, trying to do this prophecy that I don't know what it's about, and then he catches Blade somehow. I feel like issue 6 just starts with Blade in handcuffs. Did he get arrested or something? I forget.
No, they said that they, like, just grabbed him while he was sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was just...
Which seems kind of dumb, but, you know.
Well, I mean, it's Blade. He's not the smartest guy anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on. If you're Blade, can you have, like, an alarm system of some kind?
But, yeah, so, like, you're right, Andy. The only character in here that's kind of recurring is Blade.
Well, at least the only one with any kind of development to them
is
Blade. I mean, we get people in the flashbacks, but, like, his mentor is a stock character. His mother is kind of a stock character. His father's a stock character. Like, he's just surrounded by cardboard stock characters, which isn't bad if he's a dynamic personality, which Blade kind of is. Kind of? I don't know. Even then, he's like we've been saying the whole time, he's point and shoot.
Well, what's kind of interesting about, at least in these six issues, is we kind of see he tries for like half an issue to not be a vampire hunter. Because Blade gives him Doom gives him like some potion. That didn't really turn into anything, as far as I can remember.
No, we didn't see the potion come up again. I mean, it's one of those things I'm sure it will come up again, where he has an option of not becoming a vampire hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just one of those things you got to keep in the back of your mind.
So yeah, I guess, I mean, well, we see different sides of Blade, because like in the first issue we see him destroying the helicarrier, where he just fights wave after wave of vampires, which is like the movie. But then we see the part with Santa, where he's like trying to protect civilians, and then he has to make a hard choice. He has to roll the hard six. I love saying that. I love you, Bill Adama. But so you know, we kind of see different facets of his personality. He's definitely like, I feel like in the public eye, he's a gritty anti-hero in the vein of like Wolverine or Punisher or, you know, characters like that. But this comic kind of shows a different side of him, you know?
Yeah, I feel like in this we see that he has hard and fast rules.
Well, and he's able to, he does have, like, okay, so he does have hard and fast rules. I agree with that. But he can act, he acts in different ways depending on the situation.
Yeah.
You know, he could have just, like, started murdering everyone that the Soul Jumper was going into. But he knows better. And then when he kills Santa, he feels bad about it. Because some dude had to die for this demon thing to die.
Yeah, and I, again, in my mind, this comes back to the fact that he has a set power level, in that, presented with that situation, Blade has his hard and fast rule of not killing real people. And a whole big chunk of what he does when he's fighting or assessing a situation is making sure that the person he's about to kill with a stake is actually a vampire. Because he was traumatized by that when he was young and in training.
Yeah, it he didn't obsess the details, and he killed some random dude.
Yeah, so that plays into him having to make the decision with Santa, right? He will kill an innocent person if he kills that Santa, but he's not of a power level to will the situation into changing. So that he can kill the demon without killing Santa.
Yeah, he can't contain the demon in any way.
Even like, he's, as a character, as a hero, he's not that powerful or dynamic. He doesn't have that level of protagonist power. If this is a Captain America comic, Captain America finds a way to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Even though Captain America is not necessarily more powerful than Blade in terms of strength or abilities or anything like that. But Blade, just as a person, doesn't have that level of protagonist power to will the situation to let that Santa live. So, Blade seems to have a sense of his own level of agency in this universe, and knows that there's not a way for him to get out of that situation without sacrificing Santa.
Like, he understands his limitation. He knows his own strength. I guess that's one good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. And not even just, like, his own strength physically or ability-wise, but he knows his own strength in, like, the context of how he exists in this universe, which I think is also something unique and different in comics, you know, like, put another hero of the same power level, exact same power level in this situation, but give him the alignment of like a Spider-Man or Captain America, and that character will not accept that what Blade does is a reasonable outcome. But us as readers can see that it's a reasonable outcome from Blade's perspective, which, it's something that I keep bringing up about this comic, because I really, really appreciate it. And I think more than anything else, that's what's going to make me want to keep reading this, is to see how this character gets through these situations. Because now he's running from the law, and there's not going to be some mega three-issue crossover that gets him out of that situation. Yeah. So there.
Interesting. No, I think that's a good take on this comic. One another thing I like, going back to like the storytelling method a little bit, is I feel like I don't have to I don't feel the need to like marathon this comic. I feel like, okay, I've read the first 6 issues. Now if I feel I can say, oh, you know, I feel like reading Blade, or I want to read a comic, but none of the things on my shelf look that interesting, so I'm going to read Blade. I can just pick it up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like, it's so stupid. It's kind of like how I feel about Star Trek Online. Or like any other like free-to-play MMO. You know, like, it's good, and I enjoy it. But I'm also not like, there's no sense of burden or like, I need to get around to reading this, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this is on Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited. That's how I'm going to read the second 2/3 of this run.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't feel like I need to go read it this week. I don't feel like, oh, I should read this run because it's great and I got to catch up. I need to read it, you know? I'm just, it's going to be in the back of my mind. It's going to be there, and I'm going to be sitting on the bus one day, and I'm going to be like, well, I don't feel like reading, you know, these issues because it's a 5-issue run, and I got to do this, and then I don't remember where the story left off, so I have to look that up. Like, I'm going to be sitting there, and I'm going to just want to, like, crack open a single-issue comic and read it in the 20 minutes I've got on the bus, and I'm going to think of this one.
Yeah, like, it's like snacking. You know, like, you just kind of pick up something that's there and have a small bit of it, and then you're done. And you don't have to, like, you know, I don't know if the food analogy works, but, like, if you were reading, like, you know, Brightest Day or something, that's, like, Thanksgiving feast of comics, right? You got to read, like, all these fucking issues. And here it's, like, yeah, I felt like that metaphor fell apart.
No, it's a good metaphor. It's a good metaphor because of the way that this comic is snackable, right? But also, if you read a bunch of them, it gives you a much more fulfilling story through all of them. So it's like one issue is the cheese, one issue is the cracker, one issue is a little bit of jam that you put with the cheese and crackers, another issue is like the olives, and the 5th issue is like the glass of wine. And you put all the issues together, and you kind of got, you know, you hodgepodge a meal together. You know, it's not like Thanksgiving feast, but, you know, it's dinner.
Yeah.
Did that work? Did that
exactly. All right, that is cool. What I was trying to say.
Cool. Because, I mean, I feel like that's exactly how it works. Like, if you want to just pick up one issue of this, great. If you want to read, like, 6 in a row, you'll get a bigger picture of what's going on that you wouldn't have if you read them just one shot. You know? So it's like, it really does feel like, this is just me being biased, and I know it is because I know that the author is the same guy who writes CSI Miami, but it just feels like television. It feels like watch an episode, watch a season. Both are satisfying experiences.
And that's like a very marketable thing in this day and age, too. Like, comics, I think it takes some degree of fortitude to keep reading some runs, not because they're bad or like it's hard to read them, but because you would just have to make a point to make the time. And when a comic doesn't insist on a huge time commitment, it's actually easier to fit it in. So, like, I could say with certainty that, you know, like you, I will probably fit in reading this comic wherever it's convenient. And I'm probably going to end up reading this and not other things because of that, because it doesn't require such a degree of attention or, you know, just sticking through reading for a long time frame.
Yeah. All right. What do you guys think about the art in this?
Oh my God. I loved the covers. They're all awesome.
They were so good. The Santa one was amazing.
The issue 5, the Wolverine one, was awesome.
Where it's just the claws through the head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are just awesome covers. The art within the issues is pretty good. Howard Chaykin's not one of my like favorite artists, but he's not bad either. You know, he's one of these guys that I think does very good, consistent comic book art, you know?
Yeah. So what I will say, here we go. Let me try and think of how to put something.
I think that it was cool, like the sepia look of the flashbacks.
Yeah.
What was cool too is what made that really cool is because you could have flashbacks and present day stuff in the same page, because like in issue one there's a good example of that where the top panel and the two bottom panels are sepia toned flashbacks, but then the two panels in the middle where Blade's like talking to some SHIELD agents and stuff, they're normal color. They're like present day. So it was a cool way to like distinguish the things without like having a hard break, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they could throw in a little like flash of a flashback by just throwing the panel in there. Because it's appropriate, you know.
He's throwing a sepia tone panel at an old white guy saying, "Obsess the details, Blade."
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Obi-Wan saying, "Use the Force, Luke."
Use the Force, Luke. Yeah, I feel like the art was pretty good overall. It was passable. The action was good. Like, the movement was good. I never, like, felt lost, which is important in an action-heavy comic.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I feel like there was like inconsistencies with facial work, and I don't want to say that it's Blade didn't have emotion because Blade doesn't have emotion. Like, that's a character thing with Blade. He doesn't have emotion, so.
Well, I feel like Kid Blade had some good facial expressions.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I guess he did. I don't know.
I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I mean. It's written in a way that there's not a whole lot asked of the artist.
Like, I think that the facial expressions that we get are... They range from, like, huh? To grr. And that's kind of it. And I don't know if that's just the writing or if it was the art. But, you know, like, young Blade definitely has a much better range of expression than older Blade.
Come to think, the difference between huh and grr is just in the eyebrows.
Yeah, like, he scowls a lot, and then sometimes his eyebrows go up a little, and he's still scowling, like, below the eyes, so.
He's got some Spock eyebrows going on.
Yeah.
Oh, does he really? Oh
my god, they're so... They, like, point near the outside.
Maybe Blade's a closet nerd. Maybe he tweezes his eyebrows to look like Spock.
Look like Spock.
That'd be awesome. That's headcanon for me now.
Did you guys notice, like, the background art? I really liked it in this comic.
I did not assist the details.
It's subtle and it doesn't stand out, but if you look at it, like, it looks like some of it was taken from, like, pictures that were put in and then kind of made comic-looking, or maybe they're just really carefully hand-drawn, but everything's, like... so detailed and geometric.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I'm looking at issue 2 and the backgrounds in Castle Doom are awesome. Yeah. Like they look really good, especially the flashbacks where Blade's fighting alongside Doom's mom.
Huh.
Those look really good.
So the issue with Santa when he's in the mall, the ceiling has those acoustic tiles that are, like, ubiquitous in every school and office and mall ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the artist bothered to, like, put in all the spots on the tiles. And I think that's just, like, such attention to detail.
Yeah, because you could have, like, a blank ceiling and probably no one would notice.
Yeah, but this... I feel like the backgrounds in... And they're nice, too, because they're kind of, like, faded. So instead of making it look busy... I feel like the side effect was that it looked rich, which was really neat. I did have one gripe, though, and I feel like everyone looks at young Blade and they're like, "You're just a kid." He did not look like a kid to me. He looked like a small man.
That's pretty
like, I'm not even buying like teenager. There's the scene where he first meets Cutter, Cyrus Cutter, and Glory. And like there's a butler standing behind him, so you can see he's only like chest height, but he looks like a full grown dude, like he's 40. And I guess he just looks older, but it struck me as super funny.
On that note, are you guys ready to rate this?
Yes.
Sure.
All right. I don't know how I'm going to rate it, so David, you go first.
Okay. Before I give my rating, I just want to say something about a quote in this comic. So I'm reading it on Marvel Digital Online, and most of the issues, the cover is just the cover art without any words, but issue 3, for some reason, is like a scan of the cover from the comic. Like it has, number 3 and the authors and stuff. But there's a quote on the cover of issue number 3 that says, "I dug this book."
Oh, yeah.
Kirk Sticky Jones, TV's Blade. And I was like, I remember when I was going through these issues and I got to that, I was like, who is this? What? I dug this book. Who talks like that?
Yeah, there was one of them that said something like, something like a monkey in a china shop or some kind of weird thing like that.
Yeah, they had like ad blurbs that were just really amazing.
Yeah. But, okay, so anyways, so how shall I rate this?
However you want.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, David, I want to interrupt you and read the
Okay.
quote on the front of the Santa one. Roars ahead like a naked drunk in a stolen Corvette.
That's the one I was thinking of.
From Tom Spurgeon. It's so amazing.
I must have missed. I guess the only one that stood out to me was the "I dug this book" one, because I didn't even realize the other ones had the quotes too. But that's pretty great. Who's Tom Spurgeon?
He apparently is from the Comics Reporter.
Or maybe he is the
He
Comics
is.
Reporter.
I honestly don't know. I need to go look this up now.
You don't have
So
to.
okay, so let I'll rate this. I'm gonna give this a 3.5, but I'm giving it this score purely because I had a lot of fun reading it. It's not a great comic, but it's not a bad comic either. I'd say I'd call it good. It is a good, decent comic. But what makes it great is a combination of the fun of the comic, because you could really, the author could just make Blade a Wolverine pastiche, you know? He could just be this gritty anti-hero. Or he could be Punisher, specifically punishing vampires, which he
Yeah.
kind of is, but it's very quippy, and so it's fun in that regard. And then the storytelling method was awesome. I loved that it was like one-shot stories with some bookends that kind of follow this overarching story that we're getting as you continue to read. Yeah, and the covers were great. And the art was pretty good too. The interior art, I liked the paneling and the way that it transitioned from the flashbacks to the present day story. So, 3.5 is a pretty good score.
Yeah.
And I feel like it, especially since when I started reading it, I was like, I don't know what this is gonna be like. So I was pleasantly surprised by the end. So, 3.5, and if somebody said, David, what's a good Blade comic? I would point to this one. I mean, this is the only Blade comic I've read, but I wouldn't say, oh, you can read Captain Britain and the MI-13 because Blade's kind of in it sometimes.
You wouldn't say skip it, just watch the movie.
Yeah, I would say this is a fun comic.
Okay.
And now that I've read this quote by TV's Blade, I kind of want to watch TV Blade. I've never seen it.
I didn't even know it existed.
I think I remember hearing about it at some point, but anyways,
Anyway, I'll go next. I'm gonna give it a 3. I felt like it was really fun, but like, I feel like what distinguishes a 4, a 4.5, and a 5, like, that level is not just, like, really fun and all this. It's, like, it's going to have something else to it. And even if it is really fun, it's also satire or some kind of commentary, or there's some other level to something that high. So I'm justifying giving it a lower rank or a lower score just based on that idea of criteria. But I really do think, like, if you just want to pick up a comic and read it and enjoy it, this is a good example of, like, yeah, comics, people. Huh? Mm-hmm. Comics. Mm-hmm. And it's solid because it gets you that reaction and not in the ridiculous way. You know, like the ridiculous, yeah, comics, when it talks about, like, Power Girl being retconned to being the daughter of an Atlantean sorcerer. Like, comics, everybody. You know?
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, that was a real thing.
Oh my god, okay.
So it's not like that, it's not like comics are ridiculous and stupid. It's like, hey, yeah, comics. Read it, watch a dude punch some stuff, watch a dude kill some dudes, watch a dude kill Santa. Done. Yay, comics, you know? And it's like surprisingly hard to come across a good example of that. So I'm going to give a solid 3.
All right.
Jen?
I will also give it a 3. I was entertained. Like, I thought this was an entertaining comic. I enjoyed it, especially, like, you know, as I kept reading and had a better sense of what was actually happening, I liked it more, which makes sense. It, you know, it didn't, like, change the trajectory of my life or anything, but I feel like I could, on a boring afternoon, pick this up and turn it into a not boring afternoon. And you know, I would say, like, yeah, read this if you want to read, like, a light, funny, and pretty well done comic. So yeah, 3.
All right. You know, I have a feeling that, like, most of our vampire comics, I get the feeling this whole arc is going to be like this. I don't think any of these is going to be highfalutin 5-star comics. That might be me prejudging. I've heard Captain Britain's amazing. And we're going to read that next week. We're going to read Captain Britain, MI-13, Volume 3, Vampire State. Collects issues 10 to 15. Also, the annual number 1, all by Paul Cornell. That's next week. We'll see. I might be wrong. Might not all just be stupid, fun action comics. It might be something heavier. I don't know. We'll see.
This one's cool. I'm a big fan of this comic. And you have to read the annual, because it wraps up the story. It's the last issue, so.
Oh, it's the last one? Okay.
I believe it's the last one, yeah.
Okay. So if you want to, like, go online and find a direct link to the exact one we're listening to so that you can just buy it or know exactly what the cover looks like, and just know for sure what we're reading, go to our website, which is www.apsupercast.com. On the right, hit a button that says Future Shows. The next week is on there, and, like, the next month is on there. We got shit planned out, motherfuckers. It's great. I don't know why I had to curse there. I guess I just felt like we weren't earning the explicit tag. If you have a suggestion, though, for what to do that's not on the upcoming list, go ahead and send us an email at...
That would be atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
There's also the social media stuff you can do. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yay! Sorry.
Yeah!
Until next week, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.